It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Joey Medina is the Bronx-born boxer turned comedian, filmmaker, and radio host, and his journey from sleeping in his car to performing on stages around the world is nothing short of inspiring. Before comedy, he was the Arizona lightweight boxing champion, and then he went from punches to punchlines, joining the original Latin Kings of comedy alongside George Lopez, Paul Rodriguez, and Cheech Marin, and starring in his own Showtime special, Taking Off the Gloves. Joey's performing, along with Lisa Alvarado, the Latin queen of comedy, in the first in a monthly series of comedy shows in Chinita's venue in Henderson beginning August 30th at 7 and 9:15. The show is hosted by comedian Matt Plant, direct from Alaska and now making Las Vegas his home. For ticket information, go to hooked-entertainment.com. That's hooked-entertainment.com. And for everything about Joey Medina, go to joeymedina.com, and you can follow him on Facebook, X, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And Joey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, pleasure. So you're in the ring, you're punching and doing all kinds of stuff, and all of a sudden you realize that your opponent is falling down, not from your punches, but from laughing. And that's when you start your comedy career. Is that true? Yes or no?
Yeah, pretty much. Definitely comedy boxing has really prepared me for comedy. It's mentally, it's the same thing. You know, and there've been plenty of times where I first got on the stage and I was hoping someone could throw in the towel because I was bombing, and it was just like, this is pain. It's more painful than getting punched in the face.
Well, when you started the road to comedy, were you doing both at some point at the same time and then transitioned totally to comedy?
Yeah. At the very, very end of my boxing career, I started doing open mics. So that was fun. That was the only time in my comedy career that I was in shape.
Interesting. when did you know you were funny? Was it before pre-boxing, I should say, or during?
Yeah, boxing? I think as a kid, I was very funny. I was just very shy though, so I could only be funny around my friends. Once someone came in from outside the group, I kept my mouth shut. I was too shy to try to be funny.
But then you clearly knew that you had a sense of humor, but as you mentioned, you were shy. Now you're in the boxing world, which requires non-shyness and violence in that sense. So you're now boxing. Did it give you some level of satisfaction to be boxing before you even thought of comedy, but to be boxing, and it gave you a release from just growing up in the Bronx? Or what was the rationale for you to go into boxing?
Well, boxing, it was something I've always been fascinated at ever since I was a little kid and I watched Rocky for the first time, which, by the way, is my favorite movie of all time. And, but, you know, I didn't realize it while it was happening, but I realized it after. Boxing was like my father. I grew up without a father, and my mom was working several jobs. I was kind of on my own, a latchkey kid. And going to the gym every day was being raised by that. So it kept me out of drugs. It kept me out of gangs. It kept me out of bad things, and, you know, kept me on the right track. And I loved it. I loved it so much. I'm the kind of person that when I'm into something, I put everything into it. And growing up as a kid, I definitely did that with boxing, which, you know, helped raise me.
It also gave you a release, didn't it, from frustration?
Oh yeah, you know, it feels good when you punch somebody. And,
legally, right?
Yeah, legally, of course, legally. No, it's fun, and it's you learn a lot, and you know, the good thing about boxers is they don't have to prove anything. You know, they don't have to be tough guys. So I never really got into fights. I defended myself a few times growing up, but I never got into a fight. You know, that I tried. Boxers aren't bullies. You know, boxers are the opposite, actually. They're protectors. So it's, it felt good. You know, when you grow up poor, you don't know you're growing up poor. You just think that's life. That's how everybody lives, right? You know, you know, eating three meals a day, that's stuff that happens in the movies. It's like, or in prison. But yeah, but it's, I love boxing. Boxing is always, it's been my first love in many ways. And you know, I just wish I was back in shape, but it's hard when you're older.
It is. You can still do it, Joey. Come on. You can still do it.
Yeah. We'll see.
Okay. So before, and I know you've done all kinds of stuff. I mentioned in my opening about your radio career in LA and also just your writing, et cetera. But when you made a decision to go into comedy full time, how did you, I don't know what the word would be, but how did you make it happen for yourself? Maybe that's the way to pose it to you. In other words, you can't just segue. Nobody segues from boxing to comedy normally or naturally. There has to be some sort of, if not a plan, somebody saw you and said, you know what, we're going to work with you and you're going to become a comedian, or you just had the will to do it and you just kept working at it.
It had more to do with the will. I what happened really was I hit a very low point in my life. You know, you mentioned earlier about living in a car. This was during that time. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, the comedy club where I lived, and I did, that's where I did open mic a couple years before. And I figured, listen, they'll let me in because they remember me from open mic, because I had no money and I needed to cheer up. I was really depressed. So I went to the gym just to cheer up. I stood in the back because I wasn't a paying customer. So I had to stand in the back, and I watched the comedian making everyone laugh. Everyone's laugh. I enjoyed myself. And it just hit me at that moment. I go, wait a second. I have nothing to lose. I can start my life all over again. I can do whatever I want. And it became like a liberating feeling instead of, a depressing feeling. And at that very moment, I decided I'm going to do that. I'm going to be that comedian that's on that stage. And that's all I focused on. And, you know, 100 years later, here I am.
Well, you also have something unusual for a boxer. You have a certain natural charm about you, which not all boxers have, and not all comedians have, actually, frankly.
Well, listen, Mike Tyson's not here to defend himself.
So. Okay. <I'm just kidding. laughs> Well, you also have, okay, there's a key. I mentioned charm, but I think there's a better word, and it applies to comedians in particular. That is likability. People have to like a performer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're 80% of the way there. And then, yeah, if your jokes are not as funny as other comedians, but if they like you, they're going to go with it. And so you have this natural likability. Where did that come from? And where did was that, again, in growing up, or was that developed later in life? Because you hit a low point with sleeping in cars. In fact, do you still have that car?
No. Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe you'd keep it as a memento of that time, you know, and just remind you, keep you humble, Joey. Have that car sitting in the garage.
My car payments keep me humble.
Yeah, but you could have kept it in your $4 million mansion, you know, instead.
I wish.
Yeah, okay. Maybe not. So, where did that come from?
I think it's kind of a survival technique, possibly. I think I've been this way my whole life. And I think people just, you know, we all have a core, right? Some our cores are... A person's personality is a person's personality. Now, it does develop and it does grow. You gain other skills, you gain other things. But I think as human beings, we have a core, right? Some people are really good people. Some people are really Donald Trump. You know, so there's all this.
Oh, you're being political now. Okay.
it's just some people are who they are, right? But I've always been, I remember adults calling me humble. And I remember that because I didn't know what the word was. And I remember them saying, you're very humble. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I knew it was something nice, but I didn't know what it was until one day I learned what it was. And, so I think that it came from that. And I'm like any other human being. I'm flawed like every other human being. You know, there's days I have bad days. There's days where if you took a snapshot of me on that day or in that situation, you think, oh my God, this guy is horrible. Right. But generally speaking, I'm not that. That was just a piece of my life at the time or whatever it was. So I try to be a good person. I try to follow my heart. And most of the time that works. Sometimes it doesn't. You know, kind of just take it from there.
I have a 2-page printout of all your bad faults, which I'm not.
Oh, God. Today, so. Only two?
Yeah.
Only. Did you run out of ink?
Oh, single space and high side. So I wanted to get it on as least paper as I could, you know, use in that sense. You know, I find it's funny. Your voice or your accent is an interesting mix to me because I know you came from the Bronx, but there's an East LA aspect of it in your voice.
Well, it's funny because on the West Coast, people think I sound like I'm from the East Coast, and my friends and family on the East Coast think I sound like I come from the West Coast. So yeah, it's the more I drink, though, the more New Yorker I sound.
No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, was your mom able to see your rise in comedy?
Oh yeah,
she's been to shows and everything.
Yeah, my mom's been to Vegas with me. She's seen me perform in Vegas. My sister and my family. So that's, so I'm really happy with that. And it's funny because people be, they're like, man, we never thought you would do something like this. And here I am.
Yeah. Despite your ugliness, it seemed to work.
I know.
Yeah.
who knew?
I want to talk about your show coming up in a moment at Chinitas, but just before we get into that, you have a radio background too, which I mentioned in LA, and you've got also films. So how did you end up expanding your talents in those areas? In other words, I know we talked about going from boxing to comedy and how that started for you, but you clearly didn't limit yourself to just the stand-up comedy.
Right. Now, believe it or not, a lot of people don't know this. Film came first. Film came when I was in fifth grade. I had a teacher named Morris Chernow, who I put in my credits now every film I make. Mm-hmm. He played a Super 8 film in our class. It was a silent film. Back then, the film was only like 3 minutes and 10 seconds long. And it was kind of like a little Batman parody he did with the class before. And I remember watching it and my jaw dropped. I was like, oh my, I didn't know you can do that. The only time I ever seen something on a screen was either television or a movie. I never knew you can do it yourself, right? So I just watched that in awe, and I remember wanting to do that. I didn't know it was called filmmaking. I didn't know it was called directing, but I remember wanting to do that. And I remember, watching plays or sketches and wanting to write like that and do that. And I didn't know what it was called. I didn't know, but it's when I'm in seventh grade, in junior high school, I bought a projector, a camera, and a screen that all said the Board of Education on it. For one
day. So you got that at a discount.
50 bucks. So I shot my first film ever in seventh grade.
Wait a second, Joey. I'm very proud of you that you didn't steal the projector and the camera.
No. They were stolen, but I didn't steal it. I just bought them.
All right. Now I get it. Okay. So you got the camera, the projector, and what was the other thing?
And a screen.
And a screen. Okay. Yeah. And
50 bucks was a great deal.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Out of the trunk of the car that you used to sleep in. Okay.
Actually, no. It's my teacher, my homeroom teacher, sold it to me.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So we're legit. All right. I always knew you were capable of that, Joey.
Yeah. He stole it, not me.
A teacher. Oh, no. So you start monkeying around with making films.
Yeah. And that was always something I always loved. It was my first love, even though boxing was my first love as well, because I loved boxing when I was little, but I didn't start boxing until after I made that first movie. And then, filmmaking is a very expensive hobby if you're going to use it as a hobby. So, I stayed away from it until, after I graduated high school. I went to television production school. And there I learned how to produce television. I learned more about directing and filmmaking. And then I turned professional right after that. So the whole filmmaking thing went to the side. And then I got into comedy. And then when I got into the radio again, we had a contest where we had a local band. We called it Mexican Idol or something like that. Right. And it was a local band. They would play at a big concert we were hosting. at the Staples Center. And I had money back then. And I was like, you know what? As an extra incentive, I'll produce their music video for them, you know, and I'll fund it myself. So I did that, and I loved the feeling of directing again. And then I just slowly started buying equipment and doing little projects here and there. And, you know, before you know it, well, even actually before that, I directed a full movie. Like, it was, my life is all over the place. So it's, I have ADHD. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. No, right. So do you still have the original projector and screen and camera?
You know what? My mom may have it somewhere. I really want to find that film because it was a King Kong parody that I made. And it was really cute. it was funny because it was horrible.
But, oh, yeah, it's a little campy.
Yeah. But you know, I love, and the good thing, like anything else, you learn, the more you do it, the better you get. I've my projects that I've made so far have won probably close or more than 250 film festival awards.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I'm proud of them. I'm proud of all of them.
Should be. Are you working on a current project? And we're going to talk in a moment about your upcoming performance.
Well, there's the last project I did, which I'm kind of still working on it in some respects, is I did a film called Roxy and the Man with comedian Paul Rodriguez. And it's a beautiful film. It's about a Vietnam veteran who's diagnosed with cancer and adopts an abused dog that nobody wanted. And they both change each other's life. And it's a really touching story, and it's beautiful, and it's got a little humor in it because, you know, we have Paul Rodriguez in there, and I kind of wrote it specifically for him. Right. And right now it's we have it submitted in some big festivals, and we're hoping to get, you know, chosen.
So when you're going to be opening, as I mentioned earlier, with Lisa Alvarado, and this is going to be the first in a monthly series of comedy shows that it's called Chinita's Venue. It's in Henderson on Water Street, beginning October 30th at 9:15. Mm-hmm. And you're working with Matt, and Matt is a comedian out of Alaska, mm-hmm. who's now planting himself. Get that? How I did that? Planting himself in.
Yeah.
Sorry, my terrible.
And I get it.
All right, thank you. It's early, but we're doing it. Okay, so he's planting himself here in Las Vegas on Henderson. Have you structured the show yet? Do you know what you're going to be doing on stage?
There's, you know, I go to the stage the same way I go into a ring. I kind of know my opponent, and I have a plan, but I'm very flexible. So I may go on stage and the energy may be not what I expected, and I'm going to have to, I just can't continue. So I never have a script. I go there and I kind of just not wing it, but I stay loose enough to know that I can change my momentum if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but it's all going to be funny stuff.
Yeah, well, it's got to be. But Matt told me he's got a practical joke he's going to play on you. He's actually, he's hired a group of people who can't hear. They're going to be coming in. So if you can work on sign language now, I think it really would help the act.
Yeah, they're called cruise ship passengers. Yeah, that's what they are.
Well, they're busy drinking on.
And Matt Plant is an extremely very funny comedian as well. But more importantly, he's one hell of a guy. You know, we were talking about character earlier, and one of the reasons why I love Matt so much is he's got amazing character, and if you meet his mother and you know his family, you'll know why. It's a loving family. I met him in Alaska. Well, I actually met him in Los Angeles, and then, you know, we did a tour in Alaska, which is beautiful, one of the most beautiful places in the world. And he, you know, he's a great guy. So anytime I get to do anything with him or anyone else that I like, you know, like the other promoter, Kevin, they're just good people. I want to work with them and I want to hang out with them.
Yeah. It's not always the case that you can work with a great person in show right. business. I mean, you have to deal with all kinds of people in that right. sense. And then also starring with you is Lisa Alvarado, known as the Latin Queen of Comedy. Have you worked with Lisa before?
Yeah, I've worked with her, for years. First time I met her was in Chicago, and she opened for me there, and she killed it. She was hilarious. We did a college, I think, of Florida once, where we had to share a hotel room, And and I'm proud to say she doesn't snore.
Have you thought about working with her on an unusual part of it? And that is both of you kind of would box each other. What do you think?
Pardon me? Can you repeat that?
I say, what do you think if the two of you got together, in addition to doing comedy, the two of you got on stage and boxed?
Well, boxed, she'd probably win.
Yeah, that's right. What I'm thinking.
It's hard to.
So she probably boxes as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to beat a Hispanic woman. Yeah. That's like a whole new episode on Cops.
Okay, folks, not politically correct, but it's fine. It's very good. It's funny. Speaking of that, too, I know in an interview you did, you were talking about working clean versus working blue or dirty, whatever you want to call it. But you're flexible in that. Clearly, you can work clean and work anywhere, corporate gigs and cruise ships and even if they're not listening to you on the cruise ship, at least you're clean. But if you need to, you can add it in here and there. Is that advice still stand for aspiring comedians that, you know, start by working clean and you can always muddy it up a little bit down the road?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Gabriel Iglesias has said in many interviews, the best advice he ever got was from Joey Medina. And that was the exact advice that I gave him. I said, to work clean, you can always add other stuff. Now, you know, as a good comedian on stage is basically doing himself or doing herself, right? But it's a hyper version. It's where we're on. It would be the equivalent of hosting a party at your house. You're still you, but you're a little more up. You know, you got more energy.
You're ebullient and peppy, more dynamic. And that's
kind of what we have to do on stage. So I curse like a sailor normally, you know, so
I've heard the recordings. Yes.
Yeah. So on stage, I feel comfortable, but then, you know, sometimes I'll watch a video. I'm like, I could have not said it there. I could have said, so the important thing is for any comedian is to read the crowd, read the room.
And that's what you're going to be doing on October the 30th.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
7 and 9:15. So you're doing two shows, 7 and 9:15. How does that work for you in between shows? Do you retreat to the green room and eat gummies or drink water or take a snooze or take a walk or
I kind of relax. I kind of think on the last set, go, okay, what worked, what didn't work? What did I forget to do, not do? You know, and I'm like, oh, I forgot this joke. I'm going to do it. I want to make sure I do it the next one. I'll remember if the comics in front of me, how their set was, right? So, because sometimes that dictates my energy. So if I have a comic in front of me who, and this is not going to happen on this show, but who doesn't do well, I have more work to do. I have to repair kind of what that person did. But if a comic was killing it and having a great show like this one will have, right? Then it's going to be a little easier. Then I kind of just ride the wave and I just go with it.
So you're balancing the performances of the two of you in most situations. So whoever the comedian is, if they're really high energy, you're going to not necessarily go as much, or if they're not doing as well, you're going to ramp it up on your end just to make it work.
Yeah.
So the audience feels that there's a balance of energy. Maybe that's a way to phrase it.
Yeah. And every once in a while, if I think I need to, I'll you know, throw a little bit of advice to the comedians in front of me to say, hey, listen, that, you know, you were off on this, or they can't do this. Don't talk about this. Or, you know, for instance, if there's some comics, if there's a light crowd, let's say, and the place is not full and it's obvious, they make fun of the crowd. And I'm like, that's the worst thing you can do, because they are the ones that showed up.
Exactly. Yes. Common sense. Hello.
Why are you punishing them for, you know, I mean, it's okay to
acknowledge the fact that
acknowledge it, because we're not blind, right? But you never ever punish the audience for showing up to the show. That's not even
paying to be there. The other ones are not there. Go and yell at them later if you can find them.
Call them special. Call them, hey man, you guys came for this, but you guys are the best crowd.
Exactly. Right.
Just, you know, and just make them feel happy to be there.
Do you find that, because you've been at it quite a while now and performed all over the world, do you find that you're becoming a mentor in a way, an informal mentor? And then when you talk to comedians who perform with you and give them advice, do they get defensive at all, or do they understand where you're coming from with your experience?
Well, I never ever give people any kind of criticism or advice without them asking. I learned that a long time ago, especially with comics, because comics have an ego. But when I first started doing stand-up comedy, I had very little help. There were not too many comics that helped me. And I remember telling myself, I go, if I ever make it in this industry, I'm going to always help people. And I give lots of advice. I get calls from a lot of comics. Hey, Joey, this, I want to do the show here or this or that. I'm going here. Or what do you recommend for this or for that? And I gladly sit there and I give them any advice I could help them with. And I always tell them, I go, even if it's about their act, I go, look, this is just my opinion. I could be completely wrong. I go, but in my opinion, from my experience, this and that.
Speaking of that, because I think I could see you as a mentor to people, but they have to ask first for advice and suggestions. Was there someone that you looked up to when you first decided to get into the comedy world that you mimicked their style, but you were inspired by them and realized that this was something you wanted to do? I know earlier you talked about how you knew you were funny and you were shy around people that weren't in your inner circle, and then you eventually broke out of that. But was there someone in particular that you looked up to in terms of inspiration or timing or rhythm, any of that?
Well, the first people I admired and loved were, all the big comics, right? Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor. But locally, when I started doing open mic, there was a comic who started before me, and maybe he had like a year or two before me, named Pablo Francisco. And Pablo was extremely, extremely funny and still is. I just did a show with him. My last show I just did with Pablo. And he was like the funniest person I ever met in real life. And it was just, that inspired me a lot. I wanted to be that funny. I knew our energies were different and everything. And there is no one else like him in this world. And if you don't know who he is, then you're living under a rock. He's one of the funniest people ever. But that inspired me. It inspired me in the sense that I could do it. So if somebody else did it, then I always had that concept in my mind. If someone else did it, I can do it.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's absolutely great. Before I let you go, last question. You have a current project coming up that you're working on, whether it's a film or a play or.
Well, I just, my last script I wrote is called Say Her Name, and it's about a 9-year-old little black girl that gets shot by accident by a police officer. So it's I love dramas.
Oh, that's, I was gonna say, that's a great comedy. Oh yeah, that'll work out. Well, we'll look forward. Then go to joeymedina.com to get all the information of your upcoming projects as well.
Yes, and Instagram. Instagram is my social media of choice.
Right.
And it's Joey Medina Comic. So go on there, follow, and you could see a lot of my projects and stuff as well.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. My guest has been Joey Medina. He's performing along with Lisa Alvarado, the Latin Queen of Comedy, in the first in a monthly series of comedy shows in Chinita's Venue, which is in Henderson on Water Street, beginning October 30th, two shows, 7 and 9:15. For ticket information, go to hooked-entertainment.com. That's hooked-entertainment.com. We mentioned about Joey Medina's website, but also obviously Instagram, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And Joey, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I really had a great time.
Same here. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Anything you want us to be.